Welcome to Keeping Your Together in a Stressed World with Michelle Post and Scott Grossberg. Each week, we explore down and dirty ways to stop awfulizing, catastrophizing, going down the rabbit hole, and moving through all the craziness that is happening right now. We're here to create a community of like-minded people as we give you tips, tricks, and techniques for keeping sane in an unhinged world. And now, here are your hosts, Michelle Post and Scott Grossberg.
Hey, everybody. This is Scott Grossberg, one of your co-hosts for the podcast, Keeping Your Shit Together in a Stressed World. And I'm here with my co-host, Michelle Post. Hello, Michelle. Boy, do we have stress this week.
Yes, we do, Scott. I was just thinking that as you said, in a stressed world. Yeah, you can say that again. And hello, everybody. Thank you for tuning in.
And hello, you know, Scott. What? And I'm going to remind everybody that while we do this show,
yes,
we're not immune from stress.
No.
It's just these are tools to help us.
These are tools
when we have stress.
And new things we try out from time to time.
I do want to thank, by the way, all of our listeners. I did it at the end of our last podcast, but I want to thank all of our listeners again today. We're at over 8,200 plays. And our audience is continuing to grow. And I'm looking at our stat page. Pardon me, our stat page right now. And just, everybody who has helped promote us and share us, just thank you all for doing that. I wanted to look at our audience to see if any of that has changed.
Because sometimes it's so interesting to see our international audience growing.
Yeah.
Wherever you're listening to us from.
Right now, the top countries are the United States, the United Kingdom, Canada, Germany, Japan, and then Australia. There are certainly other countries in there, but those are the top ones. So we've got an internationally diverse group. Thank you for doing that. And again, we're on all the major platforms. So it's fun. I thought I would open today. I'll open with somewhat of a little bit of a rant.
Okay.
As much as it is not a rant, as it is just a cautionary tale, if you don't mind. We are moving in here in the United States into the political season, right?
Everybody is
gearing up. And we saw what happened during the last elections. And there's no indication that this coming election is going to be any less circus-like. And so with all due respect to circus monkeys, because I happen to love, the Pink Panther would say, minkies. all the monkeys are coming out, and all the clowns are coming out, and the big bad gorillas are coming out. You pick the circus animal of your choice, and they're there, the circus character. And over the weekend, I have heard, I certainly was not a firsthand listener to it, so I want to caution everybody, there's that too, right? Don't believe everything you read in the media.
It's true.
That said, if you want to decompress a little bit, because things will get a little more heated. And I even listened to a celebrity a well-known person. I wouldn't even call this individual a celebrity anymore, but a well-known individual. Some of the stuff that is being said, I'm guessing so that they have significance and get attention. And, in a political sense, to get your vote. I really don't mind what your political beliefs or leanings are. You're certainly entitled to all those, but be really careful about what kind of garbage gets dumped in your head and who tries to live there by being more dramatic and more outspoken and more, hey, see me. Let me see how outrageous I can say things so that I become visible. Keep asking yourself, is what I'm listening to true? And if you can't answer that, then that may cause you to take a step back. And for the most part, if you read it in the press, in the media, you certainly cannot be sure that it's true because it's somebody else reporting it. And right. they have a spin too, by the way, right?
Sure.
Newspapers exist based on advertising, and they have to sell ad space. whether it's on a podcast or it's on TV or it's in print media. So they've got their own audience, right? We've seen even that.
Yes.
And just as we move through it, I just want to caution everybody, because again, I kind of got activated over the weekend listening to some things that is like, what utter bullshit.
Yeah.
I caught myself, because it's like, here I was getting activated, and I wasn't even hearing it from the person, by the way. I was reading a report of what somebody said. And then I, of course, did my research and found out other people had been reported, and this political aspiring person was called out on it, and then supposedly, again, I'm going to say supposedly, doubled down on it. And wow. I got more activated, and then it was like, do people really believe this crap?
Yes. Yes. Certain people do.
And by the way, for any of you who fall into the category of, because this is one of the things I heard this weekend, that COVID, it may be a conspiracy to protect, right? It does not attack Ashkenazi Jews, among others. That was one of the things I heard over the weekend.
Oh, that's fascinating.
I got COVID. I have plenty
of Ashkenazi Jewish friends that
somebody got COVID. Somebody forgot to give me the memo, or pardon me, somebody forgot to give the COVID virus a memo out here. It's like, well, yeah, but don't touch them in Southern California. So, you know, I got it, but you know, I read things like this and other stuff, and it's like, wow.
Yeah.
I just go, wow. I don't even know what else to say about stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Boy. There's so much. Well,
tell us something fun.
To your stance, I will say two things. This is July 17th, and in 2 days, on July 19th, if you're in the United States, it is National Stick Your Tongue Out Day.
Oh, well, we're celebrating early.
So we're celebrating early with our tongues out. But on a more July 17th, today is Korean Constitution Day, where they celebrate South Korean's constitution. It's also Marine Day in Japan, where they go to the beach or the marina
marine like sea life, not marine like soldiers.
No, marine like sea life. They go to the beach and appreciate what's been given. So I would say one solution, if you're irritated, is take a deep breath and appreciate what's been given that you are grateful for. And since we have an international audience, I'll go even further, because, you know, we only do this once a week. So July 18th is National Nelson Mandela Day, International Day, where we celebrate each individual's power to transform the world.
Yeah, what an amazing man, by the way. You know, for those of you who've never looked him up, you might want to do that. Mm-hmm. There are some amazing people who have
in the
been
world
through,
trying to move the needle forward.
They have been through hell and back.
Yeah.
And they walked out of the fire, and they serve as great role models for all of us.
Mm-hmm. It's also, tomorrow is World Listening Day. So maybe
it's
World Listening Day.
What?
World Listening Day. Oh, you're pulling my chain. Maybe it just needed repeating.
What?
Yes, listen. So maybe it's a chance to just listen to what the world is trying to say and what's happening around the world. It's also Islamic New Year tomorrow, and Uruguay's Constitution Day is tomorrow. So in honor of our international audience, we often talk about national days, but there are some beautiful international days going on this week. And I do a lot of audiobook listening, and I was listening to a book called Think Again, which I highly recommend. So far, I'm not totally done it, but I'm going to make sure I get the author correctly. Just one second, because I do make mistakes. Think Again by Adam Grant, The Power of Knowing What You Don't Know, which is really cool. And he was, I don't know what my point was about that. So sorry. Well, anyway, it's a good book.
I got to tell you, this is a great little tease for next week's recorded episode, because we're going to talk about post-op and some of the stuff that I went through and the like. And I got to tell you, there was a point in my post-op recovery where I suddenly had this just complete awareness. I just don't know anything anymore.
And
so that book sounds very fascinating.
He definitely covers the Dunning-Kruger effect, which we've talked about together many times, you know, that imposter syndrome is an incredible thing to harness. That yes, of course, it hits women and minorities more often than Caucasian men. But when we have imposter syndrome, it's that we know enough about a subject to realize that we don't know it all, and the Dunning-Kruger effect being the opposite, that we know just enough that makes us overconfident and full of mistakes.
Or as I like to say, we know just enough to be dangerous.
To be dangerous, exactly. So the Dunning-Kruger effect is really fascinating. But on World Listening Day and the celebration of individuals' power to transform the world tomorrow, I think it can be important to just make a list of the things that you think you have done to move the needle forward, either in your own family or friend group or in your neighborhood or your community, city, state, country, world. What have you done to move the needle forward? And are there things left on your to-do list that you'd like to make space for? And so I think in honor of, just the news, the political ramp up, how easy it is to get really bogged down by all of the negative in the world and the negative news, it can be important to also look at what's the good that's out there and make sure you're bringing that balance in, because I can get so sucked up into the quicksand of the negative. It's absolutely so powerful.
Well, you know what? Maybe this is just a good segue into our show today.
Yes.
As we talk about it, and you know, today we are literally talking about something we've chatted about before, but it's the, you know, using both meditation and mindfulness for stress reduction. And again, I'm watching these things, listening to these things over the weekend. I had to remind myself just to breathe.
I know. Right? Sometimes all I do.
And so sometimes, you know, just for listeners, one good way to find out that you're activated, you might not even know it, right? You're activated first physically. Just catch yourself and find out, am I breathing? Am I holding my breath?
Am I holding my breath?
And then to do some great deep breathing. I thought for today, Michelle, if you don't mind, that we kind of start with the crossover, because I don't know how else to discuss it, the crossover and the distinctions between meditation and mindfulness, because they're not exactly the same thing, even though they're used interchangeably. By at least in my world, they're used interchangeably, and I even love it when they call it a mindfulness meditation. And so if you don't mind, I'll kind of offer my own personal experience.
Yes, please.
As to the distinction, there are certainly similarities, but the distinction between them for me, and it will be different for every practitioner, it will certainly be different for every instructor. For Scott, mindfulness is an awareness of now.
Yes.
Whereas meditation is more a letting go and a receiving, for lack of a better way to put it. That one of the easiest things that I can use to distinguish this is that a very simple mindfulness meditation that now I just did it, a simple mindfulness practice it is what's known as body scanning, right? You can either start at the top of your head or start at your feet and then move up your body, and you're here and now. A very a simplistic way of experiencing that is just take a moment. And again, this is not any kind of altered consciousness, but I don't want anybody doing this while they're driving or operating machinery, but let's just be aware of your right foot and notice how it feels. Is it hot? Do you feel the floor under it? Is your foot up on a chair leg? You know, just notice your right foot, and then bring your attention to your left foot and notice that. Is it enclosed in a shoe, in a sock? Is it open? Are you in a sandal? What is the temperature? What is the texture? What is your foot resting against? Do you happen to notice the earth and all its support pushing back up against it? Now bring your attention back to your right foot. Now bring it over to the left foot. Now notice your right hand. What's your right hand? You know, and you do that with your body. So you don't have to scan necessarily from the top of your head to the soles of your feet. Mm-hmm. You can simply do it. Right foot, right hand, left hand, or in any combination you want. Mm-hmm. And it's again, it's an awareness of now.
Yeah.
Versus meditation.
Yeah.
And I'm going to go to the simplistic root meditation as I learned it. It will be different for different cultures and different people. It starts with the breath, right? We talked about breathing before. And that the simplest meditation is to sit or lie quietly, preferably sitting and with that strong back and soft front, and you concentrate on the out breath through your mouth. So you're inhaling through your nose and exhaling through your mouth, and that's all you're concentrating on, just the breath.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a single-minded. Some people use mantras. Some people use affirmations. Some people use a sound, a gong, a chime. Some people will do guided meditation. I mean, we've talked before about mine. If you want a free one, you can go on my thinkingmagically.com website and find the discovery meditation. It's free. You can listen to that and let it guide you through. That's meditation versus mindfulness. It's a okay. Letting. So meditation for me is almost a surrender, right? Yeah. It's like falling into a big, soft, comfy bed. Whereas mindfulness is not necessarily a surrender. It's an awareness.
That makes sense. And then if we're talking today about why does either one work for stress reduction?
Yeah.
Then I really like your definition of mindfulness, that it's about being aware now, and mindfulness is an antidote to future tripping, worrying about the future, things that are out of your control, feeling unsafe when you're very safe inside your own home or inside your own car or inside your own office, wherever you are, but you're feeling unsafe in the world, but here and now, you actually are safe. No one's chasing you. No one's bothering you. You know, doing a scan of that, or just worrying about tomorrow when tomorrow isn't here. So I really can see how mindfulness it really does help with stress reduction, because it keeps you out of the future and back in the present moment. What are your thoughts about mindfulness and how it helps with stress reduction?
Well, so here's where they compare in my mind, because again, I don't know. I'm a student of a lot of things, right? I'm very curious. Mm-hmm. And so while I can draw these distinctions from personal practice and study, mm-hmm. I really, you know, in the real world, let's get just down and dirty, brutally honest. I don't think a lot of people care to even make the distinction between mindfulness and meditation.
Yeah, probably.
For them, it's the same. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing. The same. So, mm-hmm. right, we've talked before about the loving kindness meditation, mm-hmm. That Sharon Salzberg, who I first heard it from, marvelous Zen instructor. You know, I am wanting. You know, when I've used Michelle as an example in this, and that is, you know, I think about Michelle, concentrate, Michelle, you can do it for yourself, right? Michelle, may you be safe. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you live with ease. That's a loving kindness meditation. That can also be mindfulness, by the way, if you do it on yourself, you're doing mm-hmm. it to yourself. I am safe. I am happy. I am healthy. I live with ease. Right? It's kind of a crossover between the two. So I'm going to, for purposes of answering your question, you know, I went and looked up, because there are lots of studies, right? They've done lots of studies on meditators and what it mm-hmm. does to the brain.
Mm-hmm.
I'm willing to bet that people who are mindful probably experience a lot of the same things, because it may be while it's a difference in awareness and future pacing, and by the way, I'm not going to go into it. Maybe we'll do a whole show on this at some point. But I don't know if a lot of listeners are even aware of the reality shifters that are out there. Shifting became a big deal during COVID. It was around early on, and I know it sounds very sci-fi, that shifters, as they're known, it is a form of guided meditation. It's not mindfulness, where you, for example, lay down, you imagine a different reality.
Okay.
And you count to 100. You breathe in and out to 100 each time, shifting your reality to where you want to be.
Okay.
It's called shifting. And, okay. And they're called shifters. And again, sounds very woo-woo-y. I listen to and hear things like this, and it's like, okay, this is lucid dreaming.
Right. Or meditation. Yeah.
Or meditation.
Or guided visualization, depending on how active the person is.
And so for me, I think both mindfulness and meditation, it's important to note, at least what happens to me is there is a dramatic increase in your attention. So whether you're paying and minding and directing your attention to breathing, if you're doing the meditation concept that I talked about, or you're bringing your focused attention away from everything going on in the world, all the stressors, to your right foot, and then your left foot. And so for me, I think it sharpens attention. Interestingly, I was looking up some studies before the show this morning, and they've even discussed that meditation can replace Adderall, for example. Now, I'm not a doctor, so I don't know.
Disorder.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there, again, just lots of small studies where that it indicates that this stuff actually works, particularly for people who have attention issues or attention challenges, because now you're bringing it, you're paying more attention to your intention. The other thing is that the studies that I went through and looked at is the long-term, that long-term consistent meditation increases resiliency.
Okay, that makes sense.
Again, I look at it, let's just use meditation and mindfulness together here. For me, this is a behavior, right? We talk about it as a practice. The reason it's a practice is because you got to keep doing it. Right. It's not like walking to the bathroom and getting a Band-Aid. When you're under stress,
it's more like showering. You need to do it regularly. You don't just shower one time.
And if you don't, you stink.
Yes.
And the reason I say that is over the weekend, I talked to you about these little stressors that popped up. Mm-hmm. I could let myself be all worked up, get involved in the drama. Or because of practice, remember to breathe. And so when we talk about resiliency to stress, I mean, you're a peak performance coach. I think that you would agree that mindfulness and meditation, when used as a resiliency tool, requires you to actually be able to have that as a response that's an automatic muscle response.
Yeah, yes. Absolutely. You cannot perform at peak if your mind is not where your body is. Your mind must be where your body is. And in fact, your mind is so attuned with what your body is that it's almost visualizing a few seconds ahead of where you want it to be. So if you talk about sports performance, you visualize the hole in one, you visualize the basket, you visualize the ball contacting with the bat, you visualize throwing the ball, catching the ball. You know, you visualize your body. It is more meditative and guided imagery than it is mindful when you're prepping for an event to come. So you're prepping for a big competition and you visualize ahead of time the playing field. You visualize the court. You visualize yourself on there, mastering everything, moving with ease. And so then that creates muscle memory. And then when you're actually there, you stay present to being there. You can't be off doing laundry or looking at the stocks online, or you have to be on the court. You have to be where your body is to achieve peak performance. And so, did I tell you about the study with the basketball players where they had a team visualize? Do you remember this? They had.
I know the thing because I've delved into it.
You may have told me.
I don't think we've talked about it on the show.
Oh, well, we should share. Do you remember where the origins? I don't know who the researchers were, but they took a group of people and tested how many free throws they could make. And then they assigned them to different control groups over the course of 30 days. One control group did nothing. Okay. And then they come back and they retest them. How many free throws did you do? A second group practiced every day. They had to practice every day, do something like 30 free throws, et cetera, every day. And then they came back and they tested them in 30 days. The third group, the most fascinating group, was the visualization meditation group, where they didn't do any actual practice with the ball, but they visualized themselves getting more free throws and sinking the free throw every time. And they did that daily for 30 days. And after 30 days, of course, the group that did nothing had no change. There was no significant change in the amount of free throws that they could get in versus the ones that they missed. The best group was the group that actually physically practiced, but not by much. The group that didn't physically practice and just used their brain, by a very small percentage, I can't remember what it was, 10% less, or it just did 10% less than the people that actually practiced. So it was a fascinating descriptor of how powerful our brain is in terms of muscle memory, performance, and peak performance, that just visualizing regularly yourself doing well means you will do much, much better. So you visualize yourself giving the speech. You visualize yourself getting the job or in the job interview. You visualize yourself performing. You visualize yourself on stage. That has a powerful impact on your muscle memory.
Yeah. So one of the things that I pulled up while you were chatting, and there are other studies that do this. This one's from 2016, where they took a group of 30 people, basketball players. And I'm not, it's exactly what Michelle talked about. And it was 6 weeks of meditation for the one.
Oh, 6 weeks. Okay.
And again, I'm reading the abstract right now. The comparison between the pre-test and post-test scores of both groups using suitable statistical techniques revealed that 6 week meditation training had an appreciable effect on shooting ability of basketball players. Now, here's the interesting thing. And we have never talked about this on this show before,
but I
thought that this would be a great way to start introducing this for folks. And it's something called the default mode network.
And
what it is, this is the brain system inside each and every one of us. And I've likened what we do to computers before. And not everybody loves it when I say you're a walking computer. That means you've got viruses in your computer program. We go in, we hack them, and we make them better, right? We write better code for you.
Yes.
But the default mode network, and you guys can go look it up. I won't get into all of it. It's a very big deal, particularly in the meditation world and with Zen Buddhism. This is what's called the self-referential inner monologue, or the wandering mind that goes on inside. To put it another way, it's your monkey mind.
Ah.
Right?
Okay.
And as I'm looking at one of the references right now, they think that this default mode network is responsible for recruiting memories, associations, and recent events to help you plan for the future. So let's just take that. And what happens that I think is that meditation and mindfulness helps reset that default network of inner talking that you've got going on.
Of course.
For example, I told you Sharon Salzberg's loving kindness meditation. Michelle, may you be safe, may you be happy, may you be healthy, may you live with ease, right? If you think about that as a default way of walking through the world, this becomes part of your default network. It increases your compassion. It has to, because it's a compassion practice. And so if you take this loving kindness meditation or mindfulness practice, think of it as literally reactivating circuits and rerouting the way you're running your program. And so again, the studies that I was looking at, long-term meditators, that means people who have a practice of meditation. And by the way,
long-term.
Well, if you take some of the Zen monks, they sit in meditation every day.
Sure.
And, sure. Right. But bear in mind that even some of these, matter of fact, I think it was Pema Chodron that I read once. And I love Pema, right? I love what she does.
Uh-huh.
She's a big proponent of meditation and how to do it. She has recordings you can download and listen to on meditation. She'll be the first to tell you, she does not always sit in meditation. She goes through the physicality of it. Even though her little monkey mind, even though that default network is saying, I don't want to be here, I'm hungry, I'd rather be somewhere else. Long-term meditators are not immune to that either. And so this is where I want folks to understand, it just works. And what if I recall the story from Pema correctly, it was literally when you're sitting there in your meditation practice and your mind is going everywhere else, but where, you know, I can't concentrate on the affirmation, I can't concentrate on the mantra, I can't hear the gong right, I'd rather, and her response is, just sit there. So there's a physicality to mindfulness and meditation as well, in at least the way I've experienced it. Now, the one thing I'm interested in, Michelle, is that from a mental health standpoint, and this is your forte, right? This is where you live in. Have you ever worked with a client where we can talk about in some way that's useful to the listener that meditation actually improves mental health?
Yes.
I mean, yes. I'm not a psychologist, psychiatrist. I don't do what you do. Yes. And I know you're not a psychologist or psychiatrist. And disclaimer, as usual, we're not, Michelle's not your
therapist,
your therapist, right? but anecdotally, have you noticed that?
Absolutely. I have had a client who had great success with anger management through mindfulness meditation practice. I think this particular client started using the app Insight Timer, which I have no connection with, but that was enough of a training tool that what became a periodic practice became a daily practice. And after just maybe, I want to say three to 6 months, a dramatic difference in his ability to tolerate toxic personalities at work. Oh,
there you go.
And in his world without getting enraged, an improved ability to handle Los Angeles traffic, which you have to live in Los Angeles and drive it every day to understand how enraging it is, because I don't think people understand in other parts of the world. Oh, how many miles is it? It's not about how many miles or kilometers something is, it's how many minutes.
Los Angeles is what I call my 2-hour town. It'll take you 2 hours to get across town. It'll take you 2 hours to get around the block. It'll take you 2 hours to cross the street.
Yes, yes, yes. And if you want a comparison, it's easily 5 miles can take you anywhere from 30 minutes to an hour.
Absolutely.
Just to give you a concept of that. Whereas where I am in Jacksonville today, 5 miles takes me 5 minutes, except if I'm on the street, then maybe it takes me 10 minutes. it's like night and day.
Yeah.
I don't know how to explain it. But anyway, so it helped this particular client with traffic, work, home life. It was a really powerful self-regulating tool. And I will tell you, my first kind of specialty was in chronic pain management. And we would work with not just chronic pain, but we would work with high blood pressure, cancer, pain from cancer. What else would we work with? Those were some of the main medical diagnoses that I would work with. And nothing that we did in biofeedback and cognitive behavioral therapy and mindfulness meditation training was mostly, I would say it was mostly a meditation training, like releasing the body right? Yeah. Not necessarily mindfulness, but the mindfulness piece, what you started off with, the progressive muscle relaxation or the progressive noticing, that was more of the mindfulness aspect of what we would teach people, either active or progressive or passive progressive muscle relaxation. And between that and biofeedback, we would see people's pain management skills go up. And, you know, for those of you that don't know me personally, you don't know that I'm currently in the middle of something medical going on that has me dealing with pain all day long. And I tell you that when I am between doses or when I'm, I wake up in pain or I'm waiting for the medication to kick in, I use that progressive muscle relaxation combined with a meditation practice of saying I am relaxed with deep diaphragmatic breathing, along with other things, icing my head. It's headaches. So icing my head, you know, a variety of things, but it is effective. It's effective. I have not had to cancel on one client. I'm taking it easy in my social life, but I've been able to keep up with my workload. I've been able to keep up with most tasks of daily living, and I owe at least part of it to my training in mindfulness and meditation for legitimate pain management. This is not pain I'm imagining.
So let me use this as a stepping stone then, because I think listeners are starting to understand meditation and mindfulness can be so much more in practice than you thought. You know, you might imagine somebody sitting around because you've watched Calm and you've listened to Andy on the Calm app, who's wonderful, by the way, and his guided lake meditation. I go through and study all these things. It's more than that. And, you know, one of the things that Michelle's talked about is using this for physical pain. Mm-hmm. I can tell you that, and this is a segue into what we're going to talk about next week. I've used this for emotional and psychological pain.
Yes.
So we'll talk about my surgery and what I did post-op afterwards. And I'll be very forthright with everybody. Now, I always am, but I'll be really forthright with you. I had a tough time after this surgery. I had total knee replacement, and the pain was unbearable for me. On a scale of 1 to 10, it was 20.
Wow.
And I had heard about this lady before. And you know, it's one of those things, right? We believe in the synchronicity of the world. When things are supposed to be dumped in your lap, there it is.
Right.
And I'm going to leave it at this. I have no affiliation with her. I'd love to sit down and talk with her someday, but she's actually a DO, a doctor of osteopathy. Her name's Kim Diermo, and go look at her website. It's doctor, that's D-R Kim. And it's very funny. It's Dr. Kim D. So it's like Kim MD. So it's Dr. Kim D, but it's Kim Diermo. DrKimD.com. Just go look her up. And she uses EFT a lot. And I was able in my post-op recovery to use her videos and audios, not only to do the EFT tapping, which is a form of mindfulness, by the way.
Yeah.
But her voice became meditation. So I combined the two together. And what I'm saying is, it's not just physical relief, but it's emotional and psychological for me. Right. It was a wonderful way. I don't happen to do well left unsupervised. And I've said this before, even in my hypnosis practice, right? I can self-script and I can go through these things and I can let my default, you know, network do its thing. I would much rather listen to Michelle do her thing. Or, you know, early on, we had a guest on, Diane, and if you go back to our earlier episodes, we actually made available for you her
meditation.
Mm-hmm. You go on again to thinkingmagically.com, you find the discovery meditation. Mm-hmm. I work much better that way. Because
it's listening to
someone else. Mm-hmm. That doesn't take away from your own meditation. I've actually been, you know, there's Pema Chodron, but I also love a lady by the name, I'm going to look it up real quick. There's a lady by the name, I think it's Judith Siegel, but she does a lot of just down and dirty, for lack of a better way to put it, meditations. Lots of people that I've looked at, and I'm sorry, I gave you the wrong name. It's Joan Halifax. I don't know why I thought it. And so if you go on, one of the things that I love, I just pulled it up here. It's meditate with Roshi Joan in the mountains with instructions. Uh-huh. It's on YouTube. Uh-huh. And it's a whopping 10-minute meditation.
Yes. So
here's my philosophy.
Uh-huh.
With tongue firmly planted in cheek. If you can't take 10 minutes to listen to this meditation, then you need 20. And it becomes one of those things where you just, you could put it on your iPod or on your phone,
mm-hmm.
and even listen to it in the background. Mm-hmm. Now, some of the other things that are available out there, you know, there are binaural beats. There's EMDR. There is a thing called brain spotting now, which in fact you can do on yourself with training. And ultimately, I want to circle back a little bit, Michelle, before we're done here. And that is, you unpacked a lot of stuff when you were talking a little while ago about the results, the consequences of meditation and mindfulness, right? The anger management and the fact that they see the world differently.
Pain management, anger management.
And so what I have found is that with consistent, we don't have to call it long-term, with consistent approaches to mindfulness and meditation, mm-hmm. your biases go away.
Mm-hmm.
Your biases at the very least are lessened. And why is that? Because you start to realize the oneness of everything. You start to realize the sanctity of the world, mm-hmm. and you start to realize what's fucking important and what isn't.
That is why I brought up the Adam Grant book, is he was talking about if more people went into space, they would argue less about these differences politically. That there's something about being out in space that the astronauts said, they became much more world focused. So now you finally made me come back to it.
So I had the great honor of being able to sit down with Story Musgrave. And we became friends, and we've been able to write and talk on the phone. And, you know, Story, one of the space leaders who's done more. If you read about this man, he's just amazing what he does. Mm-hmm. He's a doctor. He's an explorer. He now is out saving forests. And it's the same thing. He was out in space, and he would go out there. And at the time, he told me, I'm the only shuttle commander, Scott, who would ever turn the lights off in the shuttle. And just watch and just look.
Just watch. Yes.
He said everybody else was afraid to turn the lights off, which is a whole nother story. And it created in him, I just got such a feeling of oneness and connectivity. And that, you know, the man came back and suddenly he's talking about other countries and saving the earth. A humanistic approach to aliens. I mean, you name it. It's just the compassion of looking out and saying, we're all living on this little globe.
Little globe. Yeah. I don't know which astronaut Adam Grant in his Think Again book was talking about, but he said that when you're out in space, the stars look like they look when you're on Earth, but what looks different is Earth. And you begin to realize that borders between countries and all of the just unrest that we have on the world starts to feel very obscure and meaningless from space. So now that's not to get away from the topic of today, which is, you know, mindfulness and meditation. And I do a space travel meditation with people, incorporating the planets in our particular solar system into the meditation. But one of the questions we wanted to be sure to answer before we end is kind of what you were leaning to, is can you do mindfulness training or meditation on your own, or do you do it with other people? And you gave some great examples of having other people guide you through it. And I don't think there's statistically a difference between those who could do it on their own and those who listen to someone else guiding them through it. I think the benefits, as far as I can remember, I don't think there's a difference in the benefit outcome. But I will say personally, when I'm in intense pain, I sometimes forget to go and listen to an app or right. to log on to YouTube or to listen to someone. So the training I got early in, you know, the late 1990s and early 2000s in biofeedback helps me, because in those moments where I'm sitting in my bed with ice on my face, waiting for the medication to kick in, I can remember diaphragmatic breathing and self-guided meditation as a tool. Like, the pain is not so intense that I can't remember that to do it for myself. Whereas I will forget to log into an app. This is just Michelle's personal hangup, right? It might not be anybody listening to us, but I forget to go on YouTube or to listen to my apps or to, you know, look up a website. Right. And I can do it anywhere. When I'm sitting, I had white coat syndrome when I was looking for new doctors in a new area, right? Sure. And I would sit and do my deep breathing and say, I am relaxed, which is a form of, it's a form of meditation. I am relaxed. I'm peaceful. I am calm. And I would time that with my breathing to help lower my heart rate, to help lower my blood pressure, to help me calm down and feel safe. And I will do that before a procedure, while in an X-ray, mammogram, MRI, CAT scan, you name it, you know, whereas I can't be on YouTube during those moments. So that's why I personally think if you can help yourself do the skills on your own, there are times when you won't be able to access the apps or a guided meditation that you need it.
So again, real quickly, because I want to end on something that will tie this all in about space.
Okay, good.
But real quickly, just some self-help tools. Number one, go take a look at the website HeartMath. They do wonderful things to teaching you how to breathe into your heart chakra, into your heart space. Number two, use the frickin' reminder on your phone, folks, and set aside a specific time each day and just 10-minute meditation. Okay, there's your reminder to take space. And then finally, for those of you that do love the breathing concept, I'm not affiliated with any particular company, but there are a few companies out there now that make breathing, I call them breathing straws, but they're little breathing necklaces that you wear on your neck that are a constant reminder. I have one. They're a constant reminder. Just breathe. Take 10 deep exhales, right? You concentrate on the exhale. And those are some wonderful things. You've got lots of apps out there. I happen to love Calm. I'm not affiliated, nor is Michelle, with the company, but I love Calm and I love Andy from, you know, in his whole headspace meditations. I do want to just, as a final thing, unless you've got something you want to end on, Michelle, I want to tie this back when we were talking about space, because, you know, yes, I shared the conversation I've had with Story, that they're not all like that. And, you know, William Shatner is well known as Captain Kirk, and it was a big deal of him going into outer space. And when he came back, there was the huge celebration and blah, blah, blah. I don't know if most people realize what he actually experienced out there. And so I want to read you just a quick passage from his book.
Wonderful.
Where he said, I had thought that going into space would be the ultimate catharsis of that connection I had been looking for between all living beings, that being up there would be the next beautiful step to understanding the harmony of the universe. And then he relates the movie Contact, right?
Yes.
And then he says, it was among the strongest feelings of grief I have ever encountered. The contrast between the vicious coldness of space and the warm nurture of the earth below filled me with overwhelming sadness. Now, here's the good part, because it ties in with meditation and mindfulness. I later learned that I was not alone in this feeling. It's called the overview effect, and it is not uncommon among astronauts, including Yuri Gagarin, Michael Collins, Sally Ride, and many others. Essentially, when someone travels to space and views Earth from orbit, a sense of the planet's fragility takes hold in the ineffable instinctive matter. And this is the quote I love that he posts. Author Frank White first coined the term in 1987. There are no borders or boundaries on our planet except those that we create in our minds or through human behaviors. All the ideas and concepts that divide us when we are on the surface begin to fade from orbit and the moon. The result is a shift in worldview and in identity. And I think that's what mindfulness and meditation will do for those of us that are still earthbound.
Mm-hmm. A shift in identity.
Yeah. And with that, it just give it a shot, folks, right? There's no right or wrong way to do meditation. I guess there are wrong ways. They're ineffective or suboptimal ways. And there's no, you don't have to. Mm-hmm. It's not a contest. You're not keeping up with anybody. Well, so-and-so meditates for 3 hours a day, or they go on a walking meditation for 2 hours a day, or they sit with a tree and hug it for an hour. You don't have to do
anything.
You any
might not have that kind of time, and you don't need to. You can have an effective 5-minute practice.
Yeah. So mm-hmm. next week, we're going to continue this, but in a very specific, focused way. It's going to be a recorded show. And we're going to talk about the secrets of post-op recovery. I will share a lot of the things that I've learned during this very transformative time of my life. And I'm sure, Michelle, you've got things to share as well.
Yes, indeed.
All right. With that, thank you all for being here. Please remember to like, share, post, subscribe on your favorite platform. Help us grow. And until next week, be well. Bye-bye.
Bye.
You've reached the end of another episode of Keeping Your Together in a Stressed World with Michelle Post and Scott Grossberg. If you like our show, we'd love for you to subscribe, rate our broadcast, and leave a review. The podcast is for general information only and not intended to be legal or mental health advice, nor the formation of a lawyer-client, nor therapist-patient relationship. Stay tuned for our next episode, and thank you for listening.